Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for the next 90 minutes. This is another in our News in Review series, and once again, our focus, or our main focus, is going to be on the very frustrating search for missing Florida girl, Haley Cummings. Joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Simon. Hi, everybody.
And I do want to point out that Jan tried to call in sick, but I wouldn't let her.
Thank you, Simon.
From New York, we have crime writer and author Denny Griffin. Denny, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
A pleasure to be with you again today, Simon. Thanks, and hello to everybody.
From Gainesville, Florida, we have news director and news hound for WSKY 97.3, TJ Hart. TJ, great to talk to you again.
Thank you very much.
And how is the car shopping going?
Well, it looks like here and probably tomorrow, while once the ink dries, my wife is going to be the proud owner of a very high-quality Mazda automobile. She's had these for quite some time and very sold on them, and we're not going broke either. So I think the economy, at least to some degree, is feeling a little bit better here anyway. It's been horrible in Florida, but a lot of people were doing the same thing, believe it or not. So I thought that was quite astonishing to see so many people ready to make a transaction like that.
And also from Florida, but I believe it's the southern part of Florida, we have investigator and all-round interesting guy, William Cobra Storbs. Cobra, how's it going?
Man, it couldn't be getting any better, right?
Right.
What color is that car, TJ?
The color that we're going to be getting is a light blue.
Oh, cool.
Pretty color.
Pretty color. Mm-hmm.
Cobra, you lie like a rug.
You know I do.
No.
I thought it was going to be green. I was going to play a Christmas joke on him. His other car is red. That's why I said, yeah, green one. Well, blue, hey. Blue is a form of green, isn't it?
Okay. As always, our switchboard is open, and the number to call in is 646-378-1120. But I have to ask that you free the line up as soon as you've asked your question. My friends, and I do use that term very loosely at Blog Talk Radio, have decided to put the squeeze on shows like this one. In other words, shows that are hugely successful. In fact, I'm actively seeking out other venues. If you can't get through by phone, please ask your question in the chat room. We are monitoring it. I was going to also extend a special welcome to one of our listeners, John H. Goad. John, you are an asshole. Get a life. Okay, enough of the ranting. Let's get on with the program. Jan, before we launch into the Haley story, I would like you to give us a quick update on the Kaylee Anthony and Aggie Dazier cases.
Okay, well, let's start with Aggie. This little boy's case is actually just come, it's nothing but a cold case in Florida now, it seems. He disappeared on January 10th while he was at his grandmother's house while his mother's working. And he went outside to play with friends and just disappeared. Nobody knows what happened to him. He's 6 years old and he can't even speak English. He can say all but five words, I believe they said. He's a developmentally disabled, that he functions on the level of a two-year-old. And, I mean, very helpless child that's out there. We have no idea where he's at. Nobody knows nothing. And it was just dropped from the news until recently. We decided to cover it and try to bring him back out and see if we can find somebody that knows something about the disappearance of this child. So we'd like to ask anybody knows anything about him to please call the Collier County Sheriff's Office at the phone number for it is area code 239-793-9300 and try to help find this child. I mean, he's a helpless little boy, and his birthday's coming up on October 15th. He's going to be 7 years old, and he deserves some publicity out of this to try to get him found. I mean, he's a lost child, and he needs to be found just as well as any other lost child is. So, and as for the Kaylee Anthony case, it's been reported that the FBI seems to have messed up the imprint, the heart-shaped sticker, found the residue that was found on the duct tape that was around her face on her skull. And whenever they went to take testing for the fingerprints, apparently they messed up the residue on it.
Oh.
And now they can't see it. They can't find it. And they apparently did not take pictures of it before it was destroyed. So they're hoping that the sheriff's office or somebody other than the FBI had taken pictures, and they're looking for them now. But as of right now, there's no photo image known, and the powder process from the fingerprinting is what has messed it up. So now they don't have this as evidence. So we're hoping that it's not going to be a crucial advantage for the defense, but it's still a very bad mistake. So, but that's about the only good news, not good, but only news I've found lately. So,
okay, well, let's move on to the Haley Cummings case. TJ, you always have the latest scoop. What's going on?
I'll give you the bullet points, and we can expand upon them a little bit later with the full panel. The first bullet points was the fact that we had a pond drained, and everybody knew about that. It happened last week. Another thing that had happened was that Tommy Crosland, Misty's brother, had gone to jail on a gun theft charge. And while in jail, he was questioned. He said that his sister was not at home. He received a telephone request from Ronald wondering where Misty was. He said he went down to the trailer about the 10 o'clock hour, banged on the door, no lights, no sound, no one home. That had everyone scrambling. Well, shortly after that was released and that was made knowledge, his bond got reduced from $50,000 to $5,000 with the caveat. Now, this is what made this possible. The caveat that he not leave Putnam County. If he leaves Putnam County, he's in a heap of trouble, boy. But in keeping it in the Crosland family for right now, what we have is that the mother of Misty Crosland is in jail in Tennessee and awaiting extradition to Florida. I think the hearing is coming up on Wednesday as far as that extradition hearing is concerned. And when that takes place, she will be taken down to Putnam County. The bond is at $100,000, but when she reaches Putnam County, it'll be about $10,000 and maybe $4 extra for a happy meal. I don't know why they always tag that $4 charge in there, but they do. Now, the big thing, what turned up over the week that just set the whole story on its ear? Well, it turns out that there was not one, but now two letters from the Putnam County Jail that were made public. Now, these letters were obtained by private investigator William Cobra Stobbs. I want to say that very slowly, very clearly, so everybody understands who exactly got those. And later in the show, he may or may not tell us who he got them from, but I can tell you right now, these things have been vetted and verified, and they are the real deal, because we did this independently as well before making it to WSKY's airwaves, CNN airwaves, and also on the Internet, and not only on the Sky973.com, but also on Blogger News Network. Art Harris had this too as well. We caught a big raft of baloney from the law enforcement people because in this letter, the inmate at the Putnam County Jail stated that she was questioned regarding a signed affidavit that mentioned the fate of Haley and also a pond where the body may have been disposed. And ironically, the sheriff's office was making a big to-do, puffing out their chest, saying, well, that letter didn't come out till after we drained the pond. And it's like, well, you guys are detectives, right? The letter is dated 9-18-09. Pond was drained on 9-19-09. nothing comes in or out of the jail that you guys see in it. I'm not a detective, but you tell me. You know. So that was basically the thing. And if I sound a little antagonistic toward one member of law enforcement, because that task force is great. I am not going to say anything bad about that task force. But, you know, for the desk jockey, you might want to check. You might want to check some facts, but I'm going to leave it at that. Another letter has surfaced. I know that Simon has had access to that, and Simon will no doubt tell us more about the contents of that later on in the broadcast. I hope that has brought everyone up to speed. Also, it appears that Misty has been gone for a while. I was told by Teresa Neves, her mother-in-law, that she was to go down to Universal Studios, taking the sights of Orlando, and that Ronald and Jr. were going to be making contact with them later in the week. The media, of course, found out about it. Some of the plans had changed. Maybe they went through with them after all. I've been out of the loop for 48 hours, folks. I got some much-needed rest. My health was not at its best, and I think that kind of showed on the Nancy Grace show the other night. But the trip was paid for by Neves' boyfriend, Jeff Hankton from Fruitland Park. And those are the bullet points that we have for this week.
Thank you, TJ. I think that pretty much has summed up what's been going on. Cobra.
Yes, sir.
You're the man of letters suddenly.
Oh, man. You know how it is. You look real hard, you might find a piece of paper.
Now, do you want to expand on the two letters in question?
I think they're pretty self-explanatory. I don't want to get myself in more hot water, but if there's information out there, we are going to find it.
Bill, I think some expounding needs to be done on that second one that was exposed yesterday or today, you know, to who it was from and to who received it.
It was sent from the jail from Nene to her mama, and once we learned that there was a second letter, actually there's four letters floating around out there. We got two of them. The other two are going to be kind of hard to get. One came from a jail outside of Florida to the Putnam County Jail, tipping everything off, and led to the, you know, the part of the pond draining, but it's exactly what Nene was referring to. Then the second letter was Nene's that went to Donnie Spells. The third letter went to her mama. And the fourth letter, which was, we think it's some blogger having fun, went to the press down in St. Augustine.
To the St. Augustine Reporter. Right, I knew I forgot that one.
Right, that was the fourth one. We tried to get that one. Of course, he's walking around with it in his hip pocket, and we couldn't get it. And one, of course, went that the Putnam County has, we couldn't get that. We even tried to back it up and get it from the first source and couldn't do that. We found out that one was floating around in Simona Park yesterday, and it took us to about 10:45 last night to acquire that one, and that required about a 5-6 hour stakeout on somebody that we knew had the letter. And then we got the letter, like I said, about 10:45 last night, somewhere in there.
Is that the second letter, Cobra?
Okay, I think need to bring in someone else. I do believe we have Art Harris on the line. Art, how's it going?
Hey, Simon, how you doing? I'm just glad to be here. I shot you all a quick email. I just put up my analysis of letter one and two, giving Cobra full credit for flushing them out. And I think they are fascinating. And, of course, you know, supported TJ's going with him, and I think he supported my going with him, and we talked about the Nancy Gray Show. And I think that it's funny, I just want to talk a bit about the why I think law enforcement maybe missed the point in the attack. I mean, we're not saying that this theory of what they are confronting Nene with is accurate at all or has been proved in any way. But what these letters did, Simon, is to offer the public a rare glimpse inside the investigation and how police are interviewing anybody and everybody close to Misty and any of these characters. And I go into that in this piece I just put up, artharris.com. And so it's a fascinating look at their tactics, their strategy, and how they're using anything they can to pressure any nugget from anyone that they can use to bringing Misty in the door, and she remains the key to the mystery, they believe.
I want to bring in Denny Griffin. Denny, you have a sharp mind. You don't say much, but what you do say is always interesting. But what's your take on these latest developments?
The letters, I guess, are the most intriguing thing, even though there's been quite a bit of activity. The letters have my main focus, and I haven't had a chance to check Art's new posting about his analysis of the letters. I'd just like to ask from your other panelists here, who are certainly in the know, do these things seem credible? Is any of the information in the letters, does it pass the laugh test? Do you think there's any credence to any of this?
I can take a stab at that. I think from having interviewed this woman, Nene, she's actually, Denny, in an interview that Cobra did that we filmed and is up on artharris.com, you can listen to her and compare what she says. She speaks very fast, so you're going to have to slow it down to 45 RPM. and you can hear her talk about some of the same details, I know for a fact that she does have this boyfriend. I know that the person who obtained the letters that Cobra obtained at least two of them from is very credible, and that this sounds just like the Nene that we interviewed. So take a look at the site, Denny. I'd be fascinated to get your take on it. But it does have details that we know are accurate about her relationship with a boyfriend, her anger at him for undercurrent in the letter for going with another woman. And Cobra, correct me, but was Amber involved at all with Donnie at that point?
Yes.
So interesting love triangle here. Her boyfriend allegedly took up with Ronald Cummings' ex, and the three people, Amber Brooks, Nene, and Misty, were kind of like the three musketeerettes in their affection or disaffection for each other, during this whole period. So you got to factor in this love triangle, and a lot of jealousies. But here's a girl who's stuck in jail, reaching out to her ex-boyfriend for money, wanting to know how their daughter is doing, and then saying, hey, look, these detectives are confronting me with a sworn statement by a friend of yours, and I can't believe he's saying this stuff about, I was at this party with Misty, and Haley accidentally OD'd on OxyContin, and another friend of ours tossed her in the trunk and drove her to this pond and tossed her in a black bag. I was with you that night. And in fact, she may well have been with Donnie that night, Cobra. I know she went home to sleep it off, but was that the night she drove by to get her son, her daughter, and got into a tug-of-war with Amber?
I don't think so, but I'll tell you what. The main person that was always driving that car, for the most part, these late-night runs, was Amber Brooks. And I noticed you did refer at artharris.com back to when I did the interview back in March, April, where Amber Brooks was driving that car and lost the keys out in San Mateo. And we, of course, kept the keys. When we found the keys,
And then 3 or 4 weeks later, we found the car. And inside the trunk of that car was evidential material that we tried to get to the Putnam County Sheriff's Office. But Amber Brooks got the keys from Nene, went into the trunk, took out her belongings, according to three witnesses, and poured some blue resonated liquids all through the trunk. And, of course, we followed up on that. But then that's the last we've heard of the car until now, several many months later. These letters surface, and the car's been pulled out of a boneyard to do some CSI shit on it, as she said.
Kelberg, explain. I think that to put that in perspective, just to get the chronology down, I think, just to be accurate, so she has the car. At some point, how long after Haley disappearing did Amber come back to borrow the car?
This car was taken again about the same week that Haley was come up missing. It was within that week or the next week. If we listen to the tape, Nene does tell us about the right time that she took the car. And that particular Sunday that I interviewed her on camera and went all over the car as forensically as possible without going into the trunk. We did not go in the trunk. And she was instructed to give that car to John Merchant Monday morning. And that was all caught on film. And I insisted that she take it to the Putnam County Sheriff's Office and Merry Christmas. But Amber Brooks intercepted that car sometime that night, Sunday night, that same night we filmed it, and took Misty's clothes, her clothes, and some other items from that trunk, and then deliberately poured some type of blue liquid all through the trunk, contaminating everything in there.
Now, this is according to Nene, right?
According to Nene, when I showed up with the keys and said, I wonder if they fit that car right there, and where did you get my keys? I said, better question, what were you doing out in these woods in San Mateo? That's when we found out that it was Amber Brooks who was actually there, lost, stuck in the sand, and lost the keys.
Did you ever interview Amber?
I did several times, and she continued to whisper back to me that Nene knew more than she knew, but Amber Brooks was, you know, the target of a lot of things. I just felt her to be not forthcoming.
Did she ever confirm that she took the car and borrowed it?
Yes, she did.
So here you have someone you're suggesting who intercepts it, cleans out possible items that, if in fact this letter Nene writes, this allegation about using the car to transport a body, that crucial DNA evidence could have been in that car on those clothes, showing that Haley had been in there. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying this. I think they, because the car belonged to Nene, they went direct to Nene, but the person they should have been quizzing here would have been Amber Brooks.
Well, the question that I would be fascinated to know from Denny, do you think that if this car had been sitting around in a junkyard where I understand law enforcement has recently found it and taken it for, you know, as the letter describes CSI SH blank T, very colorful word by Christina Prevett, as to the testing that was done on her car, at least she was told that it was done. Do you think that anything could be found at this late a date, Denny?
Well, I suppose it's possible. I'm not an expert on forensics, but certainly a lot of things could be degraded. And the other thing is if after all this time of sitting, if they find anything, how valuable is it in the sense that there'll be always be allegations? Well, anybody, you know, like similar to what they're saying in the Anthony case, somebody else probably got in there, somebody else did this, because there's apparently not a chain of custody if the thing's been sitting in a junkyard. It seems to me a logical argument from a defense attorney would be, well, even though you found that, it doesn't mean necessarily so-and-so had anything to do with it. So
if I understand. Yeah, sorry.
So the whole value of it, I think, would be, you know, doubtful now.
DJ, your thoughts on this car?
It needs, you know, it's being looked at, and I've heard this story from both Bill and from others about finding the key and the blue liquid and everything. There are elements of what we're hearing that were in this letter that are actually being played out, but the sworn affidavit from this Joe Pytko fella, I am a bit skeptical of what his motives might be. Why would he swear into something like this where he may or may not even have been involved? I want to know a little bit more about his motivations, but it seems that they are acting and following up on some of the elements, if not about half of them so far, in what was relayed in the letter regarding his sworn affidavit.
TJ,
okay.
Can I ask something, Simon, about TJ's point?
Sure.
If you have a guy, an inmate who has made, or a former inmate, who's been in there on cocaine charges and allegations that there was a police standoff where he threatened to commit suicide. I mean, so, you know, he's got his own issues, and you got to factor that into the credibility. But, however, if they, in fact, used his statement, whether it was fantasy, whether however he saw it, heard it, to confront Nene to get information out of her, it's just a glimpse at that this is an active investigation. Police are on it. And that they are using every tidbit to get information out of people close to Misty.
You know something, I agree with that too. And I do want to back up a little bit. I was a little harsh on one of the fellows whom I've never spoken to who came out and referred to that piece as a farce. So I don't know the guy personally, but everyone I've ever worked with law enforcement in the Putnam County Sheriff's Office on this, by God, has been... the word is we're vetting everything. We're vetting everything to the end to follow up every lead that they have at this point. So, you know, going back to what Art said, you know, they are dotting their I's, crossing their T's. It's just taking a long time. And, Art, if I can quote you in that letter you wrote to me and members of my staff at the radio station, and we printed two, is that consider some of the people that are being interviewed. Art colorfully put it, sometimes you're interviewing a rock, sometimes you're juggling Jell-O. So this has not been an easy one.
Yeah, and that this theory, I mean, we're not saying that this is accurate.
Not by any means.
Haley. But what it shows, TJ, is that this is a theory, my sources tell me, that law enforcement was in fact looking into and trying to rule it out. So that to me
definitely
makes these letters valid and makes it a valid news story.
No, indeed, and no argument for me. That's the way I looked at it from the beginning. You know, and I know you sat on it for a long time. I sat on it for 14 hours, just passing it through the lawyers, passing it through this, passing it through that. And then it turned out, you know, people need to see this. They need to know what's going on here. And by separating what is there and what is real and what is being followed up upon, I think the way you analyze this is shows why you're a two-time Emmy Award-winning journalist.
Thank you, sir. Did you have a chance to read the latest?
I would just add one thing to that, gentlemen. How did Joe Psycho, we're still going to call him Joe Psycho because I don't know how to say his name, but Joe Psycho, how did Joe Psycho have all these details all the way out to the farm, you know, Junior's Pond, I call it Junior's Pond, knowing about the car and everything. Could he have been slightly mistaken and all those things were possible except the players, not Nene, but Amber Brooks?
Well, anything's possible, I think, but I mean, that's the big question mark, is who is this guy? How did he come into play? He's supposedly friends with Nene's boyfriend. We don't know if he knew Misty, knows Misty, knows Ronald. We don't know if he was at the party, if he heard it secondhand or thirdhand. And as Simon or TJ put it, here's somebody who, you know, has a real interest, a self-interest in trying to cut a deal or to do something perhaps to lessen the charges against him.
Well, you're looking at a guy who's doing some going to be doing some serious time if convicted on cocaine and also a swindling charge too.
He knew way too much information, guys.
Okay. All right. I really need to go to the switchboard. the switchboard is getting grumpy. Let's start with a caller from the infamous 111 area code. Either your call is blocked or you're coming in from Skype.
Could that be me?
That could indeed be you.
Oh, well, thank you.
What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
My name's AJ. And I've followed the case faithfully since the start. And I have some questions regarding the credibility of the letter. Now, the letter that came out initially was dated September 18th, and I want to point out that the second letter that we have seen has no date on it. And the question, well, my problem with all of this is that L.E., can I just call them L.E., law enforcement?
Sure.
Law enforcement was actually at the site on Thursday the 17th, not the 18th. And I also wanted to point out that Joe had been incarcerated until the 30th of July, and Nene was picked up August, the middle of August, I don't know, 14th or 15th. And so my problem with the whole letter is that if Joe did this sworn statement slash affidavit, I would have suspected that it would have been done prior to July 30th, because we do not know that he had any contact with L.E. after his release, which would lead me to believe that if he gave this sworn statement, that L.E. would have had to investigate it, whether they thought it was credible or not, so that they would have been at the site before Nene was picked up. So,
okay.
Well, that's a great point. You know what? Maybe
those are very good points.
Great. That's
great. Who wants to field it?
Yeah. Can I just say one? You know, I think she's got a great point. You've great analysis here, date-wise. But you know, law enforcement has had 4,000 tips, and so the question is, where did they put this? How did they triage this tip compared to the others? And you know, it could be that they just got to it when they got to it, AJ.
Yeah, that's possible too. And also, you got to remember, Nene is just relaying questions she was asked in that letter to quote Donnie. And this was all probably within that week, the very same week. And this was all when Tommy was being questioned as well too. So you know, the dates and of course the Ponte all pretty much are consistent here. And I'm glad you pointed all that out. Now, my interest also in the Pico letter is why, and why is he signing the sworn affidavit? And it goes back to that as far as my question is concerned, too. But, like I've also said, the task force said that they are vetting every lead to the end. They're taking it until they've taken it until they can't take it anymore on each and every possible lead.
Can I throw in one thing? TJ, that's great. I think AJ has a point here. If she dated it September 18th and the pond was actually searched on the 17th, presumably, you know, these detectives would have talked to Nene, you know, before the pond was drained.
You're right. Absolutely. That's the point I was trying to make, and I probably didn't make it very clear, but thank you very much for that clarification.
Okay. Well, let's take another caller. Someone coming in from the 203 area code. What's your name and what's your question for us?
Hi, I'm not sure if that's me or not.
You're the only person coming in from 203.
Okay, that helps. My name is Lisa, and my question is, wouldn't it be easy to prove or disprove Nene's letter if they had Nene undergo a polygraph as well as this Joe Pico and ask them questions about this party and what happened? I mean, it seems like we're spending a lot of time trying to figure out, you know, was Joe bringing up swearing to this affidavit just so he could get off easier, or, you know, is there any truth to it?
You know, let me say this. If Joe was somebody who law enforcement put a lot of faith in and had this sworn statement that they believed could be believed by a jury if he took the stand, I would think that Misty would have been arrested by now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think that's got to tell you something. And, you know, that's what they're looking for. They've made no secret about it. They have made a public plea for anyone who may have seen her away from that trailer. And so far, whether they found someone or not, we don't know about that. And it's got to be somebody, though, who can hold up under some serious questioning.
Okay, thank you. I have one more question regarding the mysterious letter that was brought to the St. Augustine Press. do you Art or Cobra or TJ, anyone who spent a serious amount of time in Satsuma, recognize that person who delivered the message, the letter?
That's a great question. Cobra, let's ask you.
I don't know. I put two and two together. To me, it is either a Blogger Gone Wild or since she did work at a school learning how to file medical records, I associate it to Lindsay Crosland, who also attends a school nearby there doing some nursing stuff. And since she was in her blues and came in there, she did tell law enforcement that she was delivering it from somebody else. It wasn't hers. She just was doing it. And I don't know. I think it's a Blogger Gone Wild. But, TJ, you've been following up on that a little closer.
Let me just tell you what we know about the letter is that, one, it was a one-page letter and a one paragraph, typewritten. There are three initials at the bottom. It was in an envelope, sealed. It was addressed to the associate editor, Richard Pryor, and it had the address typed on it there at the St. Augustine Record newspaper. He opened it. He read it. He turned it over to law enforcement rather quickly, and he said, if the contents of this are true, this could be volatile. And as far as the person who turned that in, we've all seen the video, I hope, or the pictures, I hope. And there's a possibility, according to many people who've contacted me, and I forwarded this on to law enforcement, too, and have received absolutely no response, the woman's identity. I don't want to go out on a ledge other than to say this could be a possible, as Bill said, Blogger Gone Wild.
But didn't she go into, I think the word was put out, at least
she did go to the sheriff's office.
And so they know who she is by now.
Oh, they do, but they're not telling the public who she is.
Right, right. But they she's come in.
They know who she is.
Yeah.
Oh, they know who she is. I've been making requests of LE to, and they'll say, no, we're not going to identify her. We probably want to talk to her again.
Would this be someone that's a bit of a web sleuth?
In the broad sense?
We know the one thing I said there that they did release, TJ, if I remember, they said she was a messenger for someone else.
Oh yeah, she dropped it off. That's what she claimed, that she dropped that off for a friend.
Right.
I read that.
Cola, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Okay, super. Let's move on. Man.
That was nearly nasty.
It was. I mean, I do try to be nice, though. Okay, caller coming in from the 443 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Good afternoon, guys. I have a question. My question is this. Doesn't it seem rather odd that Ronald Cummings, Teresa Neves, and Annette Sykes are publicly defending Misty with the hypnosis and the voice analysis and the polygraph test? That's my first question. And the second question is, if Ronald weren't involved, why would he even go out on a limb to publicly defend her, and including his mother and his great-grandmother, if he wasn't involved? It seems to me that they're defending Misty to defend Ronald because he did have something to do with it. And does that theory make sense to anybody but me?
I'm resting my case again. There's two of them.
Well, I've got one nugget in my story today. It's Art Harris here, artharris.com, Simon. And that is that Ronald maybe is saying one thing publicly on Nancy Grace and defending Misty, and other things privately suspecting her.
Or could she just be a scapegoat? They did it together. He married her to keep her mouth shut. But the main player is him, and she was just involved or knows what went on.
Well, anything's possible, but we got to say, you know, law enforcement has cleared Ronald Cummings. At least that's what they're saying. And so, therefore, you know, you've got to at least take it to the bank that he didn't know about it, and, you know, he's not guilty of anything. So,
I don't mean to be funny. I don't mean to be funny as far as LE, because they are doing a job. That doesn't say a whole lot, because they also missed the Cobra. I mean, that doesn't mean anything because they cleared it. You know, I mean, that's just my opinion.
Sure, no. That's, I think you've got a valid point. And I've heard other people say, well, gee, have they said that deliberately just to give them a false sense of security?
Oh, yeah, I hadn't even thought of that. But can it, Cobra, what do you think?
I've always said take the guy with the strongest alibi, and the alibi just seemed too tight for me, and he's always been at the top of my list. I've asked and asked if he sends his wife down to take all these hallucinogenic tests and polygraph tests and sleepwalking tests and all that. Why don't he take some of them tests? Just clear it up for us, you know, going down there. He's not been cooperative last times with law enforcement. He kind of shrugs off the issue. This is a child missing. It's not my child. It's not TJ's child. It's not all our. It's his child. Or is it his child?
One thing that I think the caller brought up, too, about the testing and what have you, is that some of the conversations that Ronald allegedly had with Tim Miller of Texas Equisearch, his comments and some of the suggestions that he made prior to and sometimes after the questioning of Misty counter some of the apparent claims that he's making on television on Nancy Grace. They cut against the gray.
TJ, I quote Tim Miller in my story today saying what he said Ronald told him when they were, you know, during that whole period, they spent a lot of time together while Misty was being polygraphed.
Oh, yes.
And he said Ronald's theory is that she was at the trailer. Someone came in who saw something. Someone came in and Haley said, "I'm going to tell Daddy." And that is his. That's at least you know what he is. He fears.
Wow. Would you think that would play anything into that story Crystal was touting on Geraldo about Junior and a man in dark clothes? Does that give any more credibility or anything to that?
Well, I don't know. It's possible. But, you know, you got to also take into consideration Junior's age. I don't think in a court of law, even if his testimony is vetted by child psychologists and experts, as I understand, he was interviewed by some folks from the University of Florida. You know, and even then, how much weight to give his information, you know, is not going to be heavy. So, you know, it's too bad. I mean, he might hold a secret, TJ,
okay,
but we just don't know.
I need to break in. We have a question that came up in the chat room, and I actually think it's quite a good one. What was Donovan Spell's response to Christina Privat's letter?
Well, I know that from secondhand, he was not thrilled that it was made public because he's an innocent bystander in all this. Unless you can be prosecuted for bad choice in mates, that would put a long line of people out there in cuffs.
I spoke to Donnie Spells in depth as to whether or not we were going to release this letter or not. And he was kind of hesitant and left that up to a third party to decide whether or not we were going to release. We released, and, of course, I got a flurry of calls. And Donnie now stands that he's glad that it got out there. That's his overall speaking. He's glad that it got out there finally. He just wanted a little bit more running room so he could tell his children, because he didn't want his children, his kinfolks, to be thinking, you know, the worst. But while we're there, Art, I have a question that's very, very concerning. I was going to call back in and ask for you directly, but you reported that they had one hell of a fight, and he threw her clothes out. And there's half the troop saying, no, they did not have no fight, did not throw any clothes out. And I'm wondering, is your source strong on that?
It's something that that Misty has told people. And it's something that other people know. And now I read an account, was it the Orlando Sentinel, that Ronald apparently may have shown up at Nene's mother's house when they were there on the Friday in between their long party weekend, and wanted to see Misty, and she wouldn't let him in, and he threw her clothes out right there. Did you read that?
I read it, but I've got conflicting stories on it. I was just making sure that they did have a fight, and when she did go to Orlando, she was getting away because they had this fight, and now there was concern if she was coming back. So if Peyton Place is breaking down, I need to know.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that my sources, and I said this on Geraldo last night and on Nancy Grace the night before, as of now, I am told that by Satsuma sources that Ronald is not taking her calls, and that's very upsetting to her.
It's very upsetting to me. Last time didn't take no calls. A kid come up missing. So I hope this kid is protected, because it seems like when people don't answer telephone calls, a child comes up missing.
Well, I think you got to be careful about accusing anybody of anything right now.
I didn't accuse nobody. I just said you got to be careful. When telephone ain't answered, kid's missing.
Okay. With that delightful exchange, let's take another call. We have someone coming in from the 904 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Hi, this is Brenda Lee. The first comment I've got kind of expands on what your first caller, AJ, was saying about the date of the letter. I do believe law enforcement, when they go so far as to say the pondering didn't have to do with her letter, but I think it did have to do with the affidavit, because I remember St. John's County Sheriff stating on the 18th that he was contacted on Wednesday the 16th for personnel. So he was contacted by Putnam County 2 days prior to that letter being written. So I do believe that it's an affidavit. Now, on the affidavit, that guy Joe, don't you think they would have gone to the slighter expense to polygraph him before they go to the big expense of draining a pond?
I'm sure they did, yes.
TJ, I want to get your response.
That has always been about the affidavit. It's never been about Misty. Never about Prevat. It's about what Prevat said about the affidavit. It's always been about that. That's where the story lies, and just how valid is the affidavit? And what, if anything, did the law enforcement act upon according to what was relayed in the letter referring to the affidavit? Pond draining, that happened.
Yep.
Reaction to the mention of a pond. Dates are very close into what was going on there. The questioning took place prior. She's referring to things that had happened prior to the writing of the letter. Also, St. John's, that's a fact. They did. They were contacted as well on that at about that date, if I memory serves me correctly.
And the letter also doesn't, TJ, mentions her car, that they're performing tests on it, and they have done or are doing that.
Yes. Ironically, another thing happened, and I don't know if it's just one of these coinkydinks, but shortly after that letter was sent off to LE, and I, once again, this is probably just a coincidence here, but folks, I submitted for your approval. It mentions Greg Page in that letter. Greg Page, the night that letter was sent off, Greg Page was arrested on, of all things, a traffic stop, stopped on a traffic stop for not wearing a seatbelt, and some pretty flimsy the drug charges were tossed at him. It turns out that the drugs belonged to other people, but still, brought in for questioning, spent 46 whole minutes.
I believe they were in a bra, weren't they?
Yeah.
I can tell you a little bit about
it. Never went. And, also, folks, he was talked to by somebody on the telephone. He was pretty shook up. He didn't remember if it was FDLE or FBI, but according to his mother, it had a big F in it, and they were asking him some questions about Haley Cummings, and he said, I don't know anything about that, and he was able to then post bond and then leave, and Art, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you there.
It's okay. No, I spoke with his kinfolk as well, TJ, and was told that, you know, he did have a couple of, bags of pot on the floor, that some cocaine was found, but it was not his. It was in a girl's purse. And not very much, that he was stopped because he had an expired, they found he had an expired license, so this is not a good thing to be driving with down there.
No,
but they did not get him for the expired license, actually driving on a suspended. They didn't get him for that. They didn't get him for the seatbelt, and the pot belonged to the gentleman in the back seat who threw
back seat.
It
up front.
And the cocaine was in the lady's purse, and my sources say that there was a lot of drugs in that car. Just she had a child, and they escorted her promptly back out to Chad's house, of all places, where she left there in a red truck-looking vehicle when her mama came to help them all out. So they got the courtesy, and he got the jailhouse.
Oh, well, I mean, that's the way life goes.
But to say also, I think we should add that you know, when I have been interviewing folks, Greg has never been a, quote, suspect, and
no.
Believed to have been very forthright with law enforcement way back when. If his, just because his name surfaces in this letter in the supposed affidavit, in no way says that he's guilty of anything.
I second that too. I mean, he's been having himself a bad several years as far as flirtations with the law. But on this, he was one of the guys that was questioned rather quickly, and as you see, he's walking free.
Also, it should be noted that this was Palatka PD that stopped him that night, not Putnam County Sheriff's Office.
That's absolutely correct. It was Palatka PD.
And you can see his interview on ArtHarris.com in video if you'd like to kind of test and see if you believe, White Boy Greg.
All right, we're
Greg
charging
Hayes.
You, Art. We're charging you now $25.
I wish we'd get a penny a click. I could pay for a barbecue for everybody, you know?
I could pay
for
maternity fees.
I'm going to go back out to the back out the switchboard. Maybe there's someone sensible out there. Someone coming in from area code 253. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Hi, my name's Debbie, and I'm calling because I've heard about the other areas in the pond. That's just not one pond. That there's three or four different ponds. And are they surveying those ponds and draining them?
There's 300 or 400 ponds over there, honey.
I see. Okay, I understood to be three big large ponds is the way I understood to be.
Yeah, Debbie, that's a great question. I'm told that they have other ponds on the list, but it costs money to bring that big equipment in, and funding may be an issue. But they do want to search some other ponds.
Okay, one other thing is, I can't help but think that when I read Nene's letter, I keep on thinking about that washing machine going when the police arrived there that night. And, and that really, really bothers me. I think, why in the heck, if Misty was sleeping, why would the washing machine be going?
Well, but hasn't Ron
you
said
bring up a wonderful subject?
Careful, you're getting close to the back door, and that's TJ's push button right there.
I mean, come on.
I could queue up looking out my back door again.
Do it, man. Do it.
Hey, Simon, can I throw something out? Because I recall Ronald saying that they had no detergent, and raising questions about the validity of washing anything.
Oh,
I think it's in the police report.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, I clearly read it Art, on your website, and then I pulled the police report and found it there because it was a big controversy about was the washing machine really going, and this was about 4 months ago.
Well, so what you're saying is just another contradiction in Misty's account.
Right. And the police report says that the washing machine was going when they arrived.
Well, but it doesn't say it had soap in it, did it?
Well, it doesn't say it had suds in it, but you know what? She could have used Dawn dishwashing soap. Who knows? But, a lot of people use dishwashing soap when they're out of laundry soap. That's everyone, woman knows you can do that. But the idea that Nene's letter says that obviously she got sick. If she could have gotten, the little girl could have gotten sick from the oxycodone and threw up and then she would have had to wash the blanket. And why was it happening at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Well, I believe she also had an issue with bedwetting, which a lot of children do who are in very dysfunctional families with a lot of stress and a lot of fear. You can't say that that's what it's from, but this could have, who knows, set off some kind of reaction that led to something pretty bad.
Well, I don't wash my clothes at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm sorry. and I lived around these people my whole life. My sister was that type of person, and you can't believe any of them. I'm sorry. I was taken advantage of for 40 years, and you cannot believe these people. They can lie so well that it just becomes part of their personality. I mean, they lie through their teeth.
Well,
I'm sorry to say, but it's true.
It's a typical sort of addict behavior.
It is. Well, anyway, thank you very much. I love Blog Radio, and I love you guys. I listen to you guys all the time, and you're wonderful. You guys are really, really, there's something wonderful about you guys. You have the greatness to protect, and I love it.
Well, and we don't have twins.
Well, okay. Well, you guys are doing a great job. Thank you.
I think we lost TJ. I think he's too busy buying a car right at the moment.
No, he got a little offended probably because we were going to the back door and he went for his medicine and he'll be back in a minute.
You know, Cobra, it has been a busy week, and havoc has broken out in Putnam County. Uh-oh, I think I just lost Cobra.
Oh, no, I'm here. I paid my battery bill.
Okay, let's shoot to another caller. Someone coming in from the 618 area code. What's your name and what's your question for us?
Hi, everyone. This is Leah. I am really confused about the fight. Was the fight recent, or was it before Haley was missing?
What fight?
The fight between Ron and Misty.
That's everything.
Well, I think, you know, there have been,
several of them, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this is not...
But,
yeah,
I mean, is this the one, like, the morning after the pond where Ellie said that, you know, they didn't find anything, and then we've seen pictures of Misty and Ron doing their kissy stuff?
Well, let's go back to the weekend of the party, okay?
The three-day.
Yeah, the three-day party. I mean, when if you go and listen to my interview, Nene Prevett, who was the driver... She says she was called by Misty to come pick her up after Ronald squeezed her into a ball upon hearing that she might be pregnant.
Right.
And so, you know, if we don't know if that's true or not, but that led to her being on the street. And she apparently was walking back home and said that he put her clothes out. She calls Nene, and she comes and picks her up, and they're off for, you know, the party. They pick up
right.
White Boy Greg, and then, you know, things go from
but
there.
The fight is, Art, the fight was the weekend that they were partying, not recently.
No, that wasn't, that's the initial fight.
That's the initial fight,
yeah,
okay.
There has been, you know, this has not been, there has been trouble in paradise since then.
Right.
At least my sources tell me.
Okay,
and
so...
We've seen them, you know, and of course the pictures, the very pictures of affection and lovey-dovey, you know, that's a snapshot, as we say, journalism is a snapshot of history. Things can be different before and after the snapshot.
Okay. So you're saying that this was a recent fight that he, before the Lando or Universal trip?
Yes, but I'm saying also that they have been fighting, you know, on the phone, and at this point... things are very, very tense, I'm told. And at the moment, I mean, despite what any of his family members have said about plans to meet her in Universal Studios, I had not heard that. And that, you know, at one point, I'm told that Ronald told her not to come back.
So that was recent.
Yes.
Okay, that was, I'm a little confused in all the fighting, but I'm sure there's a lot of fighting going on in the Cummins house, so... thank you guys for what you do.
Oh,
thanks for calling in.
Yeah, it's
Thank
our
you.
Pleasure.
Have a good day.
And you. We have another question coming in from the chat room. Where is Johnny Sheffield now?
Asking Cobra.
Kentucky! If we were all smart, we'd all be in Kentucky.
Not me, I'm in Mississippi.
Far enough, that's good.
Okay, what's the Johnny Sheffield story?
They had been looking at purchasing property and moving to Kentucky long before Haley came up missing, and they got their plans doused a little bit, and they'd already started closing on a piece of property that they had negotiated a deal with, and they hung around, and this case seemed to be going nowhere. They became frustrated, and they hung in there as long as they could, and then when it seemed like it was not going anywhere, they decided to go ahead with their plans as if, you know, anything anybody else would have done. But they didn't move to Kentucky based on all the hassles going on. I worked for them for quite some time and spent a lot of time with their family. And in fact, they did have this property move planned a long time off, just like there was marriages planned with Crystal. There was marriages planned with this one, that one. And, you know, it seems like some folks just kind of moved on out of the way for a moment to allow the course of events to take place.
I do believe we have TJ back on the line. He obviously has found a new battery for his cell phone.
I'm back, yes.
I thought you were worried that he was going to play that out my back door business, and I was waiting for that.
Good heavens.
That's your theme song.
TJ.
Yes, sir.
You are about the most sensible person I know, which
checks in the mail.
Which may not say much, but frustration is building.
Yes,
there has to be a break in this stinking case.
Well. Yeah, there has to be, and every time we think that there's going to be a break, that's when the shenanigans begin, and sometimes the shenanigans masquerade themselves as a break in the case, and sometimes they're just nothing more than shenanigans. We do have something that may prove to be fruitful. It all depends on how this all plays out, and that, of course, is the arrest of Lisa Crosland, which is Misty's mother. And that is Haley's step-grandmother. This woman went on television, on radio, was quoted in print and on the Internet as saying, "I doubt my daughter was there, but I'm here for you, baby. I'm here for you. You can talk to me." And then her ass flies off like a flash to Tennessee shortly after the camera shut down with her husband fleeing the law. And then what kind of support mechanism is that? Okay. And then she says... again, that she believes her son over her daughter. You know, I realize this woman has a lot of problems. Misty has stated on occasion that both of her parents, in her words, not mine, are drug addicted. And that there's a lot of dysfunctionality. And I think if anyone just took a look at how the family appears, you would say that dysfunction junction is probably it. And, you know, I'm not trying to be harsh. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not trying to do anything to try to accurately portray this family. And, of course, Simon, on your site, bloggernews.net, you had an article that got a lot of reads. And it was how many Croslands can fit under a bus, because they've been having a tendency now to throw each other in that direction. And also, they have their own separate issues. And as a family, we've had multiple issues as well. Now, Mom is in Davidson County, which is right there in Nashville, Tennessee, sitting in jail behind bars on their warrant. Their bond is $100,000. Putnam County is about $10,000. So this is all, of course, to ensure that she gets to where she's supposed to go, which is Putnam County, and not bond out up there and then flee and have another circus take place. Now, when she gets back, she's going to be sitting in a very hot, because it is really hot here in Florida still, folks. If you don't live in Florida, September is still hot. It's still rather muggy. That jail in Putnam County is, well, overcrowded to say the least. And I'm not so sure the fans and the AC really work as well as they could or should to account for all those people that are huddled in there. So it's going to be an uncomfortable situation for her, and she may just talk.
I'm going to use this as a great segue. I was on the phone yesterday with Kenny Griffin, and I think he summed it up very well. He said, pretty soon, Evel Knievel will be challenged to jump over the number of buses with people involved in this case that are laying under them.
Simon, can I jump in a little bit to start here about speaking of throwing people under the bus? It's get kind of lonely up there in Tennessee right now for the father, Hank Crosland, because, you know, his wife's in jail, his son just got out, and he's down in Putnam, and his daughter is not on the lam, but she's certainly incommunicado, you know, in Florida somewhere. Just to clarify, I can tell you I've spoken with the family in Tennessee. I've spoken to her grandmother, who describes a very, learning disabled daughter, grandchild growing up. Misty would lived with her a good bit, and she helped her with her homework, and Misty would get so frustrated because she wasn't used to going to school. Her parents didn't make her go to school very much, and she would just throw her hands up in frustration, and grandmother, who's now 66, Flora Hollers, a wonderful woman, would go sit down by her and say, Misty, I'll do my best, but it's been a long time since I've been to school. Here you have this couple, Lisa and Hank Crosland.
Parents of the year.
Yeah, and they told me they went to Tennessee for a family reunion, which was confirmed by some other family members I talked to last week, and that was the reason, and also that Hank was looking for work because he has been out of work for a while, unemployed now, drawing unemployment, and they were planning to actually go back, so didn't know if they would move to Massachusetts to be with their other child, but now their family is really shattered, so. If this was the strategy, and I have to think it has to be some strategy on the part of the of law enforcement, it appears that it could be working. Also, the victim I spoke with, Marv Martin, blind, disabled, 76-year-old gentleman who had a family heirloom, the Colt 45 that Tommy Crosland was accused of stealing, at the same time when he and his mother dropped by to use his phone, that's when she apparently allegedly took some of his checks and cashed one for $400. This happened at the same time. So the question is, why wasn't Tommy and his mother arrested at the same time? And if that was strategy, let's play out Tommy, put him in for a high bond, see what he might be able to deliver. Suddenly, Tommy's in, and guess what? He delivers that. By the way, I stopped by that night and she didn't answer, so she must not have been there. That moved the suspicions miles forward, and now we don't know if the mother has anything to say. Her bond is very high, TJ, at least right now in Tennessee, as you so aptly pointed out. And $10,000 is going to be a tough one even for the Croslands to make at this time, even when she goes back to Putnam County. So, the squeeze on the family is considerable, and a lot of this. We don't know how close Misty is to her family now. Remember, she's got she took out a permanent restraining order against Tommy. Both her parents have accused her of knowing more than she says she knows and willing to talk. And her lawyer then told me that while they say they have distanced herself from the family, according to Lindsay, Misty is actually saying that she's distanced themselves from them. So
he said that numerous times.
Right. So the question then, TJ, to me is just how much affection, can they use the affection she may have for her family to leverage information from her? I mean, if her family, gets sent to the archipelago, the farthest reaches of prison or whatever, is that going to touch her in any way?
Actually,
okay.
Right. Well, actually, when you think about that, you're thinking about a young girl who said, "About time somebody else feels this way," with that kind of logic and reasoning that I'm seeing so far. But I know you meant that as a rhetorical question.
Right.
Oh, okay, Denny.
Yes.
I mean, can evil Knievel jump all these buses?
His son can.
Yes. I think it might be doable, but another couple of weeks from now it may not be because the buses keep adding up here. So,
Simon, I could answer the one question before that, why they weren't arrested at the same time. The gun being found, that's tangible evidence. I think one of the checks, she allegedly took like 10 of them. One of them was cash, and I think it needed to come back with proof positive that, yes, there's her signature, there's her. So they had to wait on tangible evidence to come back on that. That's why they weren't both arrested at the same time.
September 8th, it was cash, Cobra.
Pardon me?
It said September 8th.
They had to wait for that check to pop back so they could see who did take it.
Okay. Who handed the tip over to the newspaper?
Which one?
Oh, which one?
Which
the lady in scrubs, Simon?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it wasn't Halloween, so we can't say it was somebody, dressing up as a nurse.
Going to nursing school or to do accounting at a nursing school, so we know that. We just don't know her name. I don't know her name.
Well, I mean, those scrubs, that could be somebody working in an ER, could be a doctor's office, it could be a dermatologist.
Medical.
You can buy those at Target. Come on.
That's true.
Well, TJ, you know that lady was attending school in St. Augustine as a medical transcriptionist or records keeper or something.
I don't know that. That's what you tell me, but I don't know that because I've got several other leads that indicate it might be someone else.
Uh-oh.
I don't have any definitive.
Okay, I got to admit, it was me. Fuck it. It was me.
Okay. All right. I'll try another question on you guys. Is Misty back from her vacation at Universal Studios?
She's not Universal, I can tell you. This is Art Harris here, artharris.com, and you can read all about Misty if you go to the stories. She is still out of town, Simon. She did her quick tour at Universal, I'm told, and she was recognized, and that may not have been a good thing because I think she was seeking some privacy. She's not like Michael Jackson, but people do recognize her. So she's no longer in big public places like that.
Okay, let's take another caller. We have someone coming in from the 405 area code. What's your name and what's your question for us?
This is Teresa from Oklahoma, and I don't have a question. I just had a comment about why the mom, she doesn't even deserve that title, but why she would turn on her daughter. And I have a theory that she's just trying to better up her son because she's probably who stole the gun. She's the one that returned the gun. She's the one that wrote the checks, and he's already taken quite a blow for what she's done, and she's probably just trying to better him up.
Well, I can tell you what Misty's lawyer told me. I haven't reported yet as the reason. I have no way to, can't verify it, but that she says that the parents were mad at her because they learned that she had had obtained a prescription for Xanax for all the anxiety she's under, and that she wouldn't share it.
That wouldn't surprise me any.
Now, I mean, that does seem, a little petty, but you don't throw your daughter under the bus for that reason, but that at least was one of the reasons that she gave her attorney.
Well, I just think it's interesting that the son stole the gun, but the mom is in contact with the person and hasn't returned within 2 hours, and then she's the one that ends up writing the checks. After blaming the son for the gun, I just think she could have done both of them.
Well, do you know how that came down? In other words, they're over there at Marv Martin's house. It's at 4 in the morning. He gets a knock on the door. This is someone who's a neighbor, and for years he told me they would drop by and borrow sugar and borrow this and borrow that. He's very happy to share it, but here they are. He lets them in, and they would come over to use his phone to call others in the family to call them back at his house because their phone, they didn't have a phone at the house, and their cell phones were cut off, and so at this time they were trying to call Massachusetts, and she got a call back. He tells me that he told Tommy, Tommy wanted to use the bathroom. Don't go back in the bedroom. Use the one up here. Suddenly turns around, there's Tommy back in the bedroom, and the next day he gets up to take his medicine, looks in a drawer that he usually kind of cracks open. Well, no, he does. It's closed and it's cracked open. He looks in there. His gun's gone, and that's when he figured Tommy did it, and then I think later he discovered
it. Okay, so he knew Tommy was the one that had access to it.
Correct.
Okay, well, thank y'all.
You're very welcome. Jen, you've been very quiet this afternoon, but you did come up with a YouTube piece.
Yeah, well, somebody had sent it to him, the link to it, and you talking about the one I showed you today?
Exactly.
It, It was a video that somebody put on YouTube, and they were saying about, you know, to try to help find Haley. And in the middle of the video, a little box popped up, and it said that Haley had been found dead, and it said, "May she rest in peace," or something to that effect, or "She's in a peaceful place now." And it was kind of odd the way the way they fixed it, but I mean, it's, to me, it would have been a hoax. I would think so anyway.
Oh, hoaxes are everywhere.
Can I wait, Simon? You know, this goes back to what we were talking about bloggers and putting stuff out there on the internet that is just so bogus and deliberately lying about you know, tips they've gotten, and this is true and that is true. It is just really pretty horrifying.
Well, the video was kind of creepy, but like I said, it to me was definitely a hoax. But one of our readers had sent it to me and was worried about it, but I really honestly think that it was just a hoax.
I think we would have certainly heard about that.
Well, that's what I said. That's what I told her, that, you know, someone would have heard if she had been found. But it was just, like I said, just in the middle of the video, all of a sudden a little box with text in it come up and said that. And so, but we decided that, you know, it just looked too fake. I mean, it didn't look real. So, and like I said, like you say, if she had been found, someone would have heard about it by now.
Well, I mean, the law enforcement would have would be announcing it, you know, and so you know, I don't believe anything that people send me anymore.
Well, that's true. But the girl wasn't spreading it around. She was wanting to know if there was any, if it was legit or not, or if we could tell or not, because of that very reason.
Sure.
So, you know, she wasn't trying to start rumors or anything. It's just that she happened to come across it.
Okay, let's go to a caller. Someone coming in from the 225 area code. What's your name and what's your question?
Hello, yes, my name is Faye. I was watching a Geraldo, the 911 thing video, and after the 911 call, you could hear you had to really listen hard, but it sounded like it was Ronald, and he was saying, "We're effed now, and I didn't do this."
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know if anybody else heard that.
Good ears.
Oh,
yeah.
I think that's good hit. Cobra, I'm going to hand this one to you.
There's a lot going on that 911 tape, and we've been trying to clean it up and get all the words out of it. She's not too far off. There's a lot of there's a lot of that stuff going on. And also you can hear the dryer door opening and closed, being open and closed and open and closed. And there's a lot of that stuff going on inside that.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Thanks for calling.
Can I go back to something, Simon, real quick?
Oh, you bet.
Well, with this Tommy, you know, I spent many days with Tommy riding around down there and going out in the swamps, and I mentioned before he saved my life when I went off in the swamp, and of course he didn't have no choice. I was taking him with me. But he never once made mention of going over there to Misty's place and doing all this stuff. And in fact, in a criminal report, they tried to say that I said the child was in Georgia. So I'm watching all these things unfold, and I think the Xanax that Art referred to a little earlier may play into this thing, because all of a sudden when one got in trouble, they all started making up stories or telling stories. I don't know which is true, which not true, but it seems like they went to a lot of trouble to throw everybody under the bus to protect one or two. And I don't understand why he did that and why he didn't share that with us. And I don't understand. There's a couple things. Art, that trailer that they went to at 4 o'clock in the morning, noticing that Massachusetts is also on our timeline at 4 o'clock in the morning, seems like an odd time to be reaching out to someone. So is that trailer two doors to the right of Hank's place? Is that
no? No, this is he used to live nearby. This is a little ways away. Cobra, it's not within walking distance, I understand.
Okay.
But it's funny because what happened Marv Martin, the victim, goes to the phone and he checks now who called back, And so it turned out it was Chelsea in Massachusetts. It's Timmy's wife.
At 4 in the morning. Doesn't that seem odd?
Yeah, well, it does. But so he calls up there, and he says, okay, well, this is the next day he calls them, and says, my gun's missing, and I just want to say if it's not back here and within 2 hours, I'm going to call the police. Within 2 hours, Hank and Lisa, mother, show up with the gun and give it back to Marv Martin, who apparently Marv told me that they made an excuse for Tommy that, you know, he's doing pills, he's on drugs, and, you know, here's the gun. So there was no apology, but he got his gun back. It was a family heirloom worth about $600 and, 1904 long barrel Colt 45.
I'm going to agree with the one caller that said that it's very possible that Lisa did all this stuff. I'm going to agree with that. I'm going to kind of side with her a little bit. It makes more sense, and she produced the gun kind of quickly. And to say that Tommy was on pills and all that stuff, he smokes weed, but as far as pills, I'll put the pills back to Mommy and Daddy.
Well, I can also say that this was, according to their side of the story, that it's not a pure victim situation. That this, they knew this neighbor pretty well, and they actually had some socializing going on between him and some members of the family.
Ah, socializing.
Okay, I'm going to ask another awkward question.
TJ!
Nah, we lost TJ. I think he just bought a brand new phone, but the battery's dead. He's probably charging it up as we're speaking. Lisa Crosland's bond in Tennessee is $100,000, and rumor has it she's a flight risk. Where the hell would she go?
Yeah, you gotta be able to at least be able to afford a Greyhound ticket, Simon. And I don't think she's got a passport. It's not that it's that high for that. It's because, they just want to make sure that she's going to be there until Putnam County sends for her. She's got an extradition hearing coming up, I believe, Wednesday. If she waives that, then she'll be heading back to Putnam County, where she'll have a $10,000 bond, and she'll have to come up with, 10% of that, Cobra?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, that's the law. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's talk about Tommy Crosland. Another victim of the bus. Who bailed him out?
Don't know.
Well, I can tell you that his bond, I believe, was reduced, Simon, from $50,000 to $5,000 with the stipulation that he not leave the county.
Right.
So,
who came up with the $500 or bondsman? Who is that? But we're trying to find that out. Who bonded him?
That's a good question.
So no one has been able to ascertain.
No, but it's possible that maybe his wife's family helped out. I think that his family is pretty strapped right now, Simon.
Hmm.
Well, if they went on their own, they had to come up with the whole $5,004, and if they went with a bondsman, they only had to come up with $500. So, what do you think is the odds of that happening?
I think, quite frankly, they should have left him in jail. And I do want to say this to our listeners. Our switchboard is still open. It's 646-378-1120. Give us a call and let us know what you think. Okay. Cobra, you always have lots of stuff to say.
I don't know. I think we covered all the important bases today, and I don't want to step on no rattlesnakes or rakes or anything else, and TJ's not here to back me up, so be specific in your question.
I think that's kind of mean. I still do want to find out who bailed Tommy Crosland out.
All right, Dan. I'll make it a mission. I'll call you back as soon as I got that information.
And I also want to know all about Lisa Croslin and the 100K. I mean, oh, that's an ugly, ugly bond.
But it's an artificial number, Simon. They just, you know, like with Tommy, they didn't want to, you know, his initial bond. It was argued that it should have been a lot. I mean, you know, you're talking about a couple $1,000 for, you know, stealing a gun, you know, worth $600. But suddenly the judge was convinced that it should be much higher, and it worked. You know, in this case, like I say, this is a bond that is just making sure that she's going to be held until Putnam County comes to get her.
Okay. Unfortunately, I should have kept my mouth shut. Now my switchboard is lit up again. let's go to area code 541. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Hi, this is Elizabeth. I'd like to know, the reward was $35,000, then it went up to $70,000, and now Nancy Grace says it's $30,000. So what happened?
Good question.
A lot of times what happens, caller, is independent folks, you know, Crime Stoppers puts up so much money, then independent folks put up money, and sometimes they only put it on the table for a moment. Leonard did that, you know, if you get this child over here, find this child. He had a 50 out there, but then nobody answered to the 50 within a reasonable time. He pulls it back off the table, and that happens a lot. It goes up and down, and it's meant as an incentive. You know something, now's the time to pull the trigger, and then if it waits too long, they sometimes pull it back.
Okay, let's go to another mysterious caller that has their number blocked or is coming in from Skype. 111. Caller, you're on the air.
I'm wondering if that one's me.
That would be you.
Okay. Running under the assumption that Misty might be guilty of something or other, I've been asking the question and haven't really found a good answer. Is there a way that because she's 17, there may be some sticky legal thing that the cops don't want to bring her in until they've found more information?
Well, she turns 18 in December.
Doesn't matter. She's emancipated, proclamated now, so it's as good as good.
Well, that's the thing I was wondering. I know with emancipation there's sticky places on certain ends of it, but, I mean, could they just be waiting till they have a case that sticks hard enough to her that she won't get off on the whole I'm only 17 thing she's been griping the whole time?
I don't know. We got a couple of 12-year-olds down here in Miami in jail right now for murder. So, you know, they're 12-year-olds.
Yeah, I don't think the age is going to play out at all.
A long time ago, it seems like the age made a difference, but it seems like these days it's not as much. They don't seem to get away with as much playing the age thing.
Aunt, what do you think?
Well, I think that from what I'm told, Misty will, you know, is very, very manipulative, and she will use, you know, anything to try to portray herself as a victim. I'm told that her childhood, while not ideal, that even though she claims she lived in cars, that her family tells me that they never did, and that she exaggerates some things, and that she will do anything for sympathy. And this is shared by some people who have been privy to some of the psychological profiling that's been done, Simon. So as far as you know, her age, I don't think it's going to come into play. You know, unless, let's say, God forbid, she is the one who is charged and convicted, you know, and faces something very serious like lethal injection, which is something that frightens the heck out of her family. So I think that might come into play, you know, because, hey, 17 is young. You do 20 years, 30 years behind bars. Hopefully, whatever you have done, you will have been paid a price for.
Okay, we're just about to lose our live listeners, but trust me, the program goes on at least for a few seconds. Caller coming in 614. What's your name and what's your question for us?
Hi, this is Bobby, and my question is, has anybody talked to Jeremy Miller about what went on with him and Misty? Because he has some very valuable insight into her.
And what would that be?
I'm trying to get that out there for a long time. It seems like nobody's listening. I'm glad you brought it up.
What would it be? Is that what was asked?
No. I'm saying that's. I'm glad you brought it up. We put that name out there several times, but no feedback.
Because that's where Misty learned that she could lie to law enforcement and get away with it. That's where she learned that she could get paid for lying to law enforcement and get away with it. That's where that came from.
Okay, Art, do you have any comment on that?
Well, you know, since this has to do with allegations sexual abuse for someone underage, I don't feel comfortable or appropriate talking about it.
No, it's already a done deal, Art. He was convicted. He's been eight years for it.
I know that, but the victim was 12, 13, 14 at the time, and at least in media outfits that I worked for, that's an age that you don't mention names of abuse victims.
I don't see why not. She did and her mother did. I mean, they're the ones that put it out there originally.
No, I know. I understand. I'm just saying that that they can do that, but it's not a line that I'd rather I don't want to cross it right now.
Well,
so much,
I think it's a line that seriously needs to be crossed.
Okay, well, it's there's so much more to be talked about that's really relevant to...
I think this is relevant.
Well, it may.
I'm sorry, but because of the fact that we know that she's blatantly lied or conveniently doesn't remember.
Well, that's, as far as her quote, she's been consistently inconsistent, law enforcement said, over and over, and she is the focus. I mean, nobody believes her story. Her parents don't, police don't. And so, specifically surrounding Haley, there's lots of contradictions and flunking the polygraph, quote, miserably, according to the to Tim Miller, to the voice stress analysis by private investigator T.J. Ward, the hypnosis. I mean, there is so much to go on. No need to go, back to ancient history.
Okay, I do need to wrap this up. My producer is going, Simon, too many minutes. I want to thank everyone that has taken part today, particularly my wife, Jan.
Thank you for having me.
even though she did want to call in sick, she did put up a stellar job. I want to thank TJ. I guess he's out buying yet another battery for his cell phone. I certainly want to thank Cobra.
Yes, sir.
You're still with us?
Yes, sir. And I want you to have a happy Yom Kippur this evening, my friend, and for all the other listeners out there. And I just appreciate being a part of your show there, Simon. I appreciate your panel and all the information. And I think that with a little help and a little luck, we'll get there.
And Art, are you still with us?
I'm here, Simon. Thanks for having me and having the door open. And whenever I can, I'll be here.
Okay. This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a wonderful Sunday, and we'll all be talking again soon. Goodbye.
Take care.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.